MSSPs and other security service providers comprise the backbone of the cybersecurity industry. They are the organizations on the front line that keep the world running in the face of ever more sophisticated adversaries. In this special series, we're going to be exploring a variety of topics with seasoned experts around the ways they've learned to improve the effectiveness of their organizations. Our guest today is Amanda Berlin, Senior Product Manager at Blumira, and in this episode, we're going to talk about how to avoid burnout, managing stress, and ensuring the longevity of the business and team. But first, a word from the sponsor of this show, Lima Charlie.
My name is Maxime Lamadbrassard, and I'm the founder of Lima Charlie, the company behind the SecOps Cloud platform. Cybersecurity tools today need to evolve from one-size-fits-all silos into a modern tool set designed to adapt to your specific needs. The SecOps Cloud platform works by providing you with ungated access to the underlying security tools and infrastructure you need. Everything is on demand with no minimums, no contracts. It's an approach to cybersecurity that's very similar to that taken by AWS with respect to IT. We offer a full-featured free tier with no credit card required. Get on the platform today and deploy an EDR, start ingesting logs, build a product, or start an MSSP. We're making security flexible so you can build what's possible. You can learn more or get started for free at limacharlie.io.
My guest today is Amanda Berlin. Amanda is a senior product manager of cybersecurity at Blumira, where she works with a talented team to democratize security. With a career in IT spanning nearly her entire adult life, her expertise includes infrastructure security, network troubleshooting, purple teaming, and teaching employees about security best practices. She is also the CEO of Mental Health Hackers, an organization dedicated to addressing the unique mental health challenges faced by information security professionals and heavy technology users. Through education and support, Amanda's work highlights the importance of mental health awareness in the tech industry. We're very lucky to have Amanda here with us on the show today. Thanks for being here, Amanda. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So, as always, I'm interested in the path folks took into cybersecurity. I think we probably touched on this the last time you were on the show, but maybe can you remind us about how you got into tech and how that became a career in cybersecurity?
Sure. I don't know how much I went into it at all last time, really, but it was all on accident. Tech in general was an accident. I originally had signed up to go into the Marines, and I was going to be a professional trumpet player in the Marines. This is as far away from that, I think, as you can probably get. But I ended up having my son as a senior in high school and then thought I probably shouldn't go to boot camp. And at the time, so I went to a very small high school in the middle of nowhere in Ohio, and we only had a typing class, like as far as computers went. And I just thought, well, I'm really good at typing and I have a computer at home. So why don't I do that? Like, I like fixing things and I like helping people and I can type fast. So that's why I went into tech. And it kind of just snowballed from there. I worked, my first couple of jobs were at ISPs. So back when you had to, you know, walk little old ladies on the phone over, like trying to fix their modem and add modem strings and, you know, all the Windows 95, 98 XP days. And then I worked at a hospital for a long time. So I worked up through tech support, did network analysts, like server admin, backups, virtualization, racking servers, you name it, right? Like just everything. And started to learn about security then. I didn't realize it was an entire field. And this would have been in like, what year is it now? Like 2012, maybe, ish.
That's really when the industry started to take off, eh? Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. And we had our first pen test at the hospital, and Dave Kennedy was working for a local company because he lives near me, and he just happened to be the one to come and pen test us. And so we got to watch, well, he let me like watch over his shoulder. And I was just like absolutely amazed because at the time I was trying to go for my CCNA and I thought I was going to do networking for forever. And then I'm like, nope, I like this better.
Do you want to tell our listeners maybe a little bit about who Dave Kennedy is? Because the name rings a bell for me, but I'm sure a lot of people don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So like right now he's a fairly well-known name in the security space. back then he wasn't really, but he has a couple different companies. One is TrustedSec, and they do offensive security stuff and compliance. And then also Binary Defense is another one of his companies.
I don't know him personally, but he does also a lot of community stuff and seems to be a pretty awesome guy.
Yes. Yeah. So like I first got introduced to the security space kind of through that because he ran his own conference called DerbyCon that was in Louisville for a long time. And that was the first security conference I ever went to. And then I was able to find other people that had passion for things like that that I did. And I never knew there was a whole community around it. So he really got me into it. And he also helped bring to life Mental Health Hackers, because DerbyCon was the first place that Mental Health Hackers, like before we even had the name, started doing stuff. So that was our first like mental health and wellness area was at a DerbyCon. And it just took off after that.
Okay, so you met Dave Kennedy at the hospital and you got sucked into this thing that we all do every day.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And then I went on and I did a bunch of stuff in like network security. So I configured firewalls for a long time just so I could have security in my title. And then I did a lot of stuff with Splunk and SIM, and then ended up at a small MSP that eventually turned into Blumira. So I've been at Blumira now for 7 years.
Awesome. And do you want to maybe tell us a little bit about Blumira and what you folks do over there?
Sure. So we are a SIM and XDR for smaller teams. And I say smaller teams because that doesn't necessarily mean smaller businesses. Right? Because there are some real large businesses with not full security teams, and they don't have the time and expertise to implement a SIM, to do threat research, to create detections and reports, and all of that kind of stuff that normal SIMs need you to do. So we're for those people, right? That SIM has always been a dirty word to a lot of people because, you know, like I remember the first one I put into place, it was a train wreck. It didn't work. It was absolutely horrible. And that happens a lot. So we're there to service those kind of people with that. And like we're adding automation and all of the cool bells and whistles that people need.
Right. So force multiplier for small teams doing big things.
Yep.
All right. So today's topic is about avoiding burnout, managing stress, and ensuring the longevity of business and team, which is a very important topic for anybody running a services business that requires staff to scale. I asked you to come chat with us about this because you, as you previously mentioned, are the CEO of Mental Health Hackers. Seems like a topic that you were quite knowledgeable in. Can you maybe tell us about what Mental Health Hackers does and what it hopes to accomplish before we dive in?
Yeah, so it all came out of me talking about my own anxiety and depression, kind of like on social media and stuff. And that went to me giving talks on it. The first keynote I ever gave was around mental health InfoSec. And it was just like I'm not a mental health professional, but it was a lot of the research, like reading that I did, and just kind of trying to destigmatize talking about it, because anytime that I was talking about it before, I had a lot of responses on how people were amazed that I could be depressed because I was just always happy all the time. So that made me want to talk about it even more. And then after people just kept on asking me to give the same talk over and over again, I thought we could reach more people by doing bigger type events and rooms. So I wanted to get as much information out of there as I possibly could, and not just the people that wanted to come and watch my talks. So we have Mental Health Hackers now, and we have, I think, 6 or 7 board members and like lots of volunteers. And we run mental health and wellness villages at conferences, and then we'll do online events. We have gone to companies and done events there where we just talk about mental health and do, you know, webinar, like all of the different things that you can do to kind of help bring to light and destigmatize just talking about it in the workplace, in person, with friends and family, with strangers, like whoever it is. I've had a lot of people that I've just met tell me the most intense, like personal mental health stories ever. And it's very, I'm always very honored, and it's a very like heartwarming thing to like bring community together like that.
Mm-hmm. I had a couple things in my life over the last, you know, 6-7 years, just from the stress, and I'm a very open person. I shared that freely as it was happening, and I was amazed how many people I shared that with also were struggling and shared their own struggles. And, you know, so I do think it's great to talk about it because you realize you're not alone and it's not something to be ashamed of and you can fix it, hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a super common reaction after the talks I was giving is people were like, oh my gosh, I'm sitting here listening to this and I thought I was the only person having these thoughts or going through this stuff, or like you feel like you're on an island dealing with it by yourself. And then you end up finding that lots of us are.
All right. Well, so onto the topic. Can you share your personal definition of burnout and why it's such a critical issue for entrepreneurs and teams?
Oh, yeah. So, like, I guess my personal thought of burnout is just the being super overwhelmed and just over it. You don't enjoy what you're doing anymore. Like, so many of us are really passionate about the work that we do, right? Like, whether it's security or like networking or, you know, support services, whatever, like, people can get really passionate and really love the jobs that they do in this space. And when you stop that, when you don't like it anymore, and it's due to like overwork or lack of communication or whatever, right? That can just lead to you just not wanting anything to do with it anymore. I don't know how many people you could ask in InfoSec that if you weren't doing this, like, what would you be doing? Or, you know, if your company got bought and you ended up with several million dollars, like, what would you be doing? And my answer is still always like, I don't know, I just love what I'm doing, so I'd still be doing this. But a lot of them want to get out of security. Like, no, I'm gonna go be a farmer.
Yeah. That's my go-to.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, just something that has nothing to do with technology. And yeah, so that burnout can look like that sometimes, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's often in this industry, we have this culture of no sleep and just getting it done at all costs and this sort of superhero myth. And yeah, in the short term, that's amazing if you can pull that out and save the day, but you can't save the day every day. You're going to destroy yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And people, like, I can't remember when somebody mentioned this to me or when I read it, something like that. It's when I talk to people and they're like, oh, how are you doing? Or like, what's going on or whatever. I'm like, I'm just busy. Like, but that's not the best answer to give. Yeah. It gets to be a lot if you're not careful.
Yeah. So are there common stress triggers that leaders or team members often overlook in high pressure environments?
I think lack of communication is one that is sometimes ignored, but not necessarily on purpose. Like, everyone thinks they're good at communicating. And especially if you're communicating directly about mental health, that's one thing. But also, like, working in healthy communication to all the communication you're working on. So, like, you're right. Like, we wear this, like, I'm working all night, or I pulled 48 hours, or I'm always working 80-hour weeks or whatever, as like this badge of honor. And communicating constantly about how that's not good, right? Like, that's not a good work-life balance. That's not healthy for your body. That's not great for longevity in a company or in even the space you're trying to work in. So just like, I think just the constant communication gets overlooked a lot. That's ends up building up to more stress.
Right. And so how can leaders recognize those early or this early warning sign in themselves or their teams? What does that look like in a business environment?
A lot of times it can look like higher turnover, right? Because it's easier to go to another company where you're the new person and you don't know a lot of stuff and you're not in charge of everything. I'm sure there's people that know what that's like. Yeah, so like that's definitely one of them. Short tempers and like short fuses and people that don't normally get upset about things getting upset. And there's definitely people that can work in an organization that I look to as like canary in the coal mine type of thing. Like, if this person's getting upset,
there's a problem.
Probably a larger issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a couple different things. just like constant vigilance almost.
Yeah, you'd think those would be obvious, but I can see how just in the daily churn of everything, you would notice, hey, we had two people leave this month and one person last month. And
yes, yeah.
Amanda just flipped the table over.
Right, right.
Interesting. So are there cultural norms that tend to contribute to this? You know, you mentioned communication. Are there other things? I guess we're not in the office so much anymore, but in the remote work culture that we can do or recognize?
Oh, gosh. I mean, remote's hard in general. And communication around, you know, having people remotely. As far as culture goes, I don't know if remote necessarily matters. I don't have a whole lot of experience in other companies being remote, but it can be hard to like feel more like a team and work together on things. So I think that that doesn't always help, right? You feel like a little disconnected.
Yeah, I think most of the people on our team schedule like short one-on-ones with sort of different people across the company weekly or bi-weekly just to have that check-in and actually remember there's humans here.
Yeah, like actually attached, right? Yeah, we do a thing, it's like a Slack bot that will randomly match you up with people in the company for like these coffee chats. And the goal is to not talk about work at all. Like, it's just going out and getting coffee with like somebody that you sit next to kind of thing. You're not supposed to talk about work. That does not always happen. It can tell you.
Yeah, it's hard to avoid.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But yeah, you're right. Like just the connection with the actual humans behind all of the work is harder remotely, but you have to be very intentional about it.
That bot sounds interesting. I'm definitely going to see if I can find that.
Or what it's called. I think it's
Coffee Bot?
A donut.
Donut. Okay.
Donut.
I'll see if I'll link it in the show notes if anybody's interested. And we'll give it a try over at Lima Charlie. I think that's a great one. Because, yeah, we're like 30 people now. And it's still small by company standards, but it's starting to feel like I don't know everybody closely the way it felt like a couple of years ago. So.
Right. Yeah, I was in a meeting the other day and I'm like, I don't know who this person is.
So which strategies or habits have been the most effective for you in managing your stress? How do you unwind and make sure you're not approaching burnout?
I used to work nonstop, right? Like morning, evening, night, like all the time. I was definitely putting in close to 60, 70 hours a week on weekends, you know, name it. I don't do that anymore for my own health. And I'm taking up hobbies that are not computer related. You know, before, like, even if I wasn't working, I was still
hacking something,
writing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was writing, or I was doing CTFs, or I was doing research, or I was doing this other thing. Like, all of that kind of stuff, like, still adds up and contributes to the burnout because you're not getting away from any of it. So I draw a lot, and then I also exercise a lot. I really took up yoga, and I've been doing that pretty much a few times a week for the last 3 or 4 years, and that has helped a ton. But just being active and doing what you can away from screens is, I've never heard that go bad.
I'm a little sad. I'm very interested in software-defined radio right now, and it's taking up all my spare time, so.
But it's cool.
It is cool.
It's so cool. Oh, my God. Yeah.
It is.
Have you made changes to your leadership style along with your lifestyle changes? Like, has this impacted how you lead people inside of your organization?
I don't think it's changed my leadership style just because I haven't been a leader for that long. I was lead in our detection team for a long time, but I was never management or anything like that. Like, I never put any kind, like, a lot of effort into, I don't know, any of the, like, Brené Brown, like, leadership stuff, right? And then when I got my actual, like, title change to, it was either lead or, I think it was lead, because before I was just, like, acting like one. I wasn't actually in title. And I'm like, all right, I need to not be one of those people that just because I'm here the longest, I end up being in leadership.
Right.
I want to actually want to be in leadership and I want to be good at it. So I already knew about a lot of the mental health stuff, and I knew about like all of like the good things around people, but applying that to management and leadership can be difficult sometimes, right? So just a lot of reading and me trying to figure out what's best and healthy for teams is kind of what that looked like.
Did you pick up any advice or knowledge around how leaders could balance high performance expectations with the need for team well-being? I know there's got to be a scale there.
Yeah. So I've always been lucky that everybody on my team are just like, they're all really high performers and they're fantastic. But then always reminding them, especially if there's a one-on-one where they're like, yeah, I'm really frustrated about this, or I'm like really, you know, just tired of this thing or whatever, like there's a problem they can't solve. Again, just like the constant reminders and communication around like, well, when's the last time you took a day off? Or when's the last vacation you went on? You know what? This doesn't have to be finished today. No one's going to die. Go for a walk. Right? Like it's very just like the understanding that them being in the right mind space and healthy is going to be better for them. And it's also going to be better for the company. Right? There's been like a bunch of studies saying like the more money you put into wellness and your people actually being healthy and happy, the better everything turns out. Like you get your money back in several fold.
Sure. And I think that's pretty self-evident if you've ever worked on something you really cared about versus having to do work that you weren't very passionate about.
Yes.
Like those are two different outcomes.
Yep.
Do you have any examples of a tough period in your career where you had to navigate this or had a team where maybe this was starting to come apart at the seams and how you got through that?
When I worked at the hospital, it was real bad. That's when I was working like 60-hour weeks. I had the biggest narcissist ever as a boss and just like constant questioning of myself and others. And it was just very high tension. I fixed it by leaving.
Sometimes that's probably the best solution, right?
Yeah. That was not what I wanted because like my actual close team that I worked with, I still talk to this day, right? They're like still, I loved working with them. They were all hard workers, but I can tell you none of them are there anymore.
Right. Yeah. And I imagine a hospital, my friend, she's just finished medical school and sort of doing her practicum in the different areas of medicine because they kind of rotate through them. But the whole culture is like work 80 hours a week, which I find wild because you're talking about people who put their hands inside of other people. Like I want the guy that got 8 hours of sleep last night and is feeling really good about himself or themselves.
Yes.
Not the person who hasn't slept and not liking life.
Yeah. I was trying to find the name of the book that I read that has a really good example of, there's a hospital example that they went over. Gosh, what was it called? It was like a leadership book. The Fearless Organization is a really good one. And they talk about candor and how you can still be kind, but you need to be able to open up and like have real conversations with people and open conversations with people. And one of the examples was like a younger med student was being like dressed down by an older physician and not listening to some of the new stuff that she had learned. And it like put a patient's life in danger. So that was another good one.
Well, we'll link it in the notes. Are there any common misconceptions about stress and burnout that you think need to be debunked?
That there's always signs, right? Some people are really good about hiding them.
And this is sort of a callback to your story earlier where you were suffering from depression and everybody's like, what do you mean? You're so happy.
You're great.
Yeah, everything's great.
You're always smiling. Yeah.
If you could give one piece of advice to an entrepreneur or manager about avoiding burnout, what would it be?
If you can't figure out how to balance, like, especially if it's like entrepreneurs, definitely it's hard to get where you're going with only 40 hours, but still schedule time off. You shouldn't have like your employees forcing you to take time. And like, listen, like you need a break, man.
Yeah, you've gone too far.
Right. Yeah. Like actually have scheduled time that you listen to yourself and get away because it's worth it.
And we might have covered some of this, but are there initiatives or practices that you think organizations should adopt to prioritize longevity of their people?
There's a couple that we do at Blue Mira. So one is, if you don't have like a set forth like mental health program internally, like a lot of big companies do, you can just like give employees stipends. So listen, like this extra $100 a month or whatever is for you to use at a gym or for therapy or for to do whatever you want, like mental health related, like save it up for a while and go on vacation, whatever. But that puts the decision power back in the employee's hands and then still lets them know that you care about like their mental health and well-being. And then there are the American Psychological Association has resources for implementing like mental health and wellness programs in organizations where like they'll tell you what codes to look at for your health insurance or like other places that you can partner with. They have full things that you can implement. Yeah. So that's just a couple of them.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll link that. There'll be a lot of links in the show notes today. And where's Mental Health Hackers next? Are you guys going to be at any of the upcoming conferences? I know we're just sort of getting into that season right now. So
we are just getting into it. I know we will be at B-Sides Charm in Baltimore. We're always at Blue Team Con in Chicago. And I am now in charge of all of their villages.
See what happens when you stay at a place too long.
Yep. Where else are we going? So like, I don't have a handle on all of them because I do have a handful of volunteers that just go and sign up and do their own now, like underneath our umbrella. So I don't have all of those.
I can put another link in the show notes, I'm sure, right?
Usually our social media has it.
Okay. Okay. So this is a slightly take on an old question I ask everybody that comes onto the show. It can be as wide or as narrow as you want. Do you have any predictions for the future of how MSSPs operate in the cybersecurity space?
How MSSPs operate? I mean, just always more automation and tool consolidation, I imagine. Every single time I talk to an MSP or MSSP, they're using like 500 pieces of software to try and accomplish the same thing. So that hopefully that's the future.
Single pane of glass, I believe, is what it's been termed.
Yeah, that thing.
Awesome, Amanda. Thank you so much for taking the time to come speak with us today. It's always a pleasure interacting with you. And if for the listeners who may not know, Amanda's mushroom drawing that she did on the Cybersecurity Cares Telethon was mailed to my daughter, who has been fixated on the what she calls the mushroom aesthetic for about a year now. Everything in a room is mushrooms. And she jumped up and down and squealed when she opened the gift from Amanda. So, yeah.
Yep.
All right, Amanda. Take care.
Yep. Thanks. Bye.
And that concludes this episode of the Cybersecurity Defenders podcast. If you have any feedback or ideas for future topics, please send an email to defenders@limacharlie.io. You can access the intel we talk about on the show in real time and join the conversation on the Lima Charlie Community Slack channel at slack.limacharlie.io. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider sharing it with someone or leaving a rating or review. And don't forget to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening from. Thanks for listening in. We'll see you on the next episode.